A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be behind the microphone with you once again. Sorry that I was absent yesterday. Had another health-related thing that I had to take care of with Missy. But the hell or high water was not going to keep me away from today's show, given that the Supreme Court holding oral arguments in Vanderstock versus Garland, the challenge to the ATF's rule on unfinished frames and receivers, treating them as if they are fully finished and functioning firearms. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the ATF had overstepped its institutional authority in promulgating this rule. The government appealed that to the Supreme Court, and today oral arguments were held. Now, oral arguments, the audio available while this was taking place live, and the oral arguments, the audio will be posted at some point to the Supreme Court's website. Don't have a full transcript to give you, but the Firearms Policy Coalition, which brought the original lawsuit, did live tweet or post, I guess, on X, the oral arguments and their response. So I thought we'd kind of go through some of what the justices had to say. And I will say right up front, I'm a little concerned about this one. You know, the Supreme Court did invalidate the ATF's bump stock ban, ruling that the agency had indeed overstepped its authority. But this time around, you know, and again, it's not necessarily a good idea to read too much into the questions that the Supreme Court justices may pose to either the government or the FPC attorneys. But, you know, you did have some offhand comments at one point. Chief Justice Roberts said something about, well, maybe these guns are just, you know, too easy to make, something like that, which is, again, a little concerning here. Because the issue isn't how easy it is to, you know, assemble a firearm out of a unfinished frame of receiver. The issue really is whether the ATF has the authority to treat something that could become a frame or receiver as a fully completed firearm that must be serialized. And that's the issue here. But there was, I think, a lot of kind of dancing around the issue, and then a lot of delving into technical details that really, I don't think, had a really touched on the essential question here, and that is the agency's authority. At one point, Justice Sotomayor asked what the standard of review should be, right? Pointed out that, okay, block of metal, a completely just, you know, a solid block of aluminum, that's not readily converted to a fully functional firearm. So how does the government know what is covered? How are we supposed to know what is covered by the rule? Now, the government's response was that the court should only consider if the rule itself violates federal law, which was actually a point that the Firearms Policy Coalition attorney tried to make as well. But again, there was a huge gulf in terms of how the government felt the rule should be interpreted and what the FPC attorneys believe how the rule should be interpreted. Justice Alito at one point asked, okay, so we're dealing with, you know, things that could become a firearm. Well, if that's the case, is a pad and a pen a grocery list? The government said no. Are eggs and peppers a Western omelet? The government said no, because they have other uses, right? You could use those eggs to make scrambled eggs. You could use the peppers in enchiladas. Justice Amy Coney Barrett then asked, okay, well, would that be different if you ordered a meal kit from HelloFresh, a Western omelet meal kit? Then could you treat eggs and peppers as a Western omelet? And the government said, yes. Yes, you could in that case. Now, again, I would argue that even if something is sold, and I think the omelet analogy is kind of stupid, honestly, but let's just take it to its conclusion here. If somebody buys a Western omelet kit from HelloFresh, the kit arrives and they say, you know what, I don't really want to make a Western omelet. I'm going to use these ingredients to make something else. I'm going to use it to make a souffle. I'm going to use it to make a quiche. Is that still a Western omelet? Of course not. Any more than an unfinished frame or a receiver is a fully functional firearm. Justice Neil Gorsuch, as well as the Firearms Policy Coalition attorneys, did point out that the government argued in court just a couple of years ago that these unfinished frames and receivers are not firearms. Now, Congress hasn't made any changes. Instead, it's the ATF's interpretation of this rule that has changed. The Solicitor General said, well, people are misreading what we said in that case. But there was a company that is involved in this lawsuit that submitted a kit to the ATF before this new rule came out, and that kit was approved. The ATF said, yeah, you're not dealing with firearms, right? You're dealing with something that you can build and make into a firearm. Now, that has changed. And again, the underlying statute hasn't changed. Congress has taken no action on this. This change comes entirely from the ATF and its assertion that it has the authority to all of a sudden now treat things that it is not before now treated as firearms, as if they are, in fact, fully completed guns. Justice Kavanaugh, at one point, said that the government's argument is strong. He said he was concerned about mens rea, people being caught up in this unknowingly. The government says, well, we're not going to charge anybody if they really thought that they didn't need a serial number for their firearm. Kavanaugh then followed up, said, okay, well, if somebody didn't ask ATF and they truly thought that they weren't violating the law when they sold this object without a background check, could they be charged? And the government says, yes. Uh-huh. So what's the distinction there? You know, you could also ask, now this is involving another ATF rule, that expansion of who is engaged in the business of selling or dealing firearms, right? If somebody sells a gun or merely makes an offer for sale, the government says, well, maybe that person, probably that person, would be considered an unlicensed gun dealer and we could charge them. But again, how do you know? The ATF is playing fast and loose with all of these new rules. Short-barreled rifles, right? The pistol brace rule. How do you know whether or not you have a short-barreled rifle according to the ATF? You don't. Chances are that if you put a stabilizing brace on your pistol, the government would consider that to be a short-barreled rifle, but there is no hard or fast rule here. And even with the unfinished frame and receiver rule, the ATF has interpreted their own new rule in a couple of different ways. They say that this is only about these, you know, these kits that are sold. But the gun control groups are actually suing the ATF, arguing, no. Your new rule actually goes beyond kits, right? And it includes just a simple unfinished frame or receiver. It doesn't have to be sold as a part of a kit or not. That should still be considered a functional firearm. And the ATF has disagreed with that interpretation, even though I think it's actually a fair reading of the plain text. So it is a very confusing topic. And again, I wish that the justices had been more engaged in talking about the scope of the agency's authority here, as opposed to trying to get into the granular details. Okay, well, if it's not this test, then what test should it be, right? There was a exchange at one point, Justice Sotomayor asking or saying, since a part at some point has to be made enough, far enough towards a gun to be a gun, the ATF should be allowed to decide where that point is. The problem, and the ATF or the FPC attorneys pointed out that they provided the court with alternative tests that it could use. But Justice Sotomayor then started asking, okay, well, what if you do this? What if you remove a tab? What if you add a hole? Is that close enough to a gun? Again, the underlying issue here is whether or not the ATF has the authority to decide on its own at what point an unfinished frame or receiver becomes a fully functional firearm, or whether or not that's up to Congress. Congress wrote the underlying statute. And again, for decades, the ATF said, no, unfinished frames or receivers are not firearms. A couple of years ago, they decided, nah, actually, you know what? They are firearms, at least if they're sold as a part of a kit. Now, again, what changed here? The underlying statute didn't change. Congress took no action. This comes entirely from the executive branch of government. And a rule that is actually a new law disguised as a regulation. Justice Alito, at one point, asked, okay, so if we're trying to figure out, you know, when a gun is a gun, Well, if you take out one or two parts, would you still call that a gun? Right. He used an analogy to a car. He said, what if your neighbors were storing a car and took out some parts? People still refer to it as a car, even if it didn't currently have an engine. And the FPC attorney, I thought, had a great response to that and said, OK, that may be the case. But if you asked to borrow your neighbor's car and he gave you the keys and it didn't have an engine in it, would you consider that to be a car? Not a functional car, right? It may have a body. It may have a frame, but it lacks the components necessary to actually get you from point A to point B. So not really would that be considered a working vehicle any more than an unfinished frame or receiver is a working firearm. At the end of her arguments, the Solicitor General talked to, and again, it did not involve a technical discussion. The government's final assertion was basically, look, these kits are designed to circumvent the federal law requiring that firearms be serialized. That in essence, this is an entire industry that is developed for criminals to acquire the parts necessary that they can build their own unserialized firearms. She said that there's been, I think, 1,000% increase, according to her, in unserialized firearms that have been recovered as part of a criminal investigation. And then she said, if the plaintiffs win in this case, that, quote, all guns could become ghost guns. Now, if that was the case, if that truly was the case, then why, before the ATF adopted this rule, did we not see the vast majority of firearms in this country be unserialized home-built guns? Remember, the status quo for decades was that these unfinished frames or receivers were not firearms. So if all guns were going to be ghost guns, as the government alleged, why didn't that happen before? The government didn't have an answer. Of course, well, the government wasn't asked that question. But I couldn't help but think that when the Solicitor General said, oh, every gun in the country could be a ghost gun. No, if that was going to happen, we would have seen it already. And ultimately and fundamentally, we have not. I would also argue that fundamentally, these statistics show that far more firearms that are recovered and traced, either as a result of a criminal investigation or even just a found firearm, are serialized. They are may have been defaced, but they had a serial number at some point, right? So if, quote unquote, ghost guns are a problem, then serialized firearms, under the government's logic, would be an even bigger problem. It again, it was a frustrating oral argument in many respects, just because of the scope of the questions, the angle that so many of the justices took. I couldn't even begin to offer a prediction as to what's going to happen here. I think there's a fair argument to be made that under the Supreme Court's precedent, particularly when it comes to bump stocks, their decision in Loper-Bright that should make it more difficult for the government to justify these broad and expansive interpretations of existing policies, that the ATF's rule on unfinished frames and receivers doesn't stand a chance. But again, largely based on some of the questioning and the comments that we heard from Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Kavanaugh, again, the aside that he thinks the government has a pretty strong case, some of the comments by Justice Amy Coney Barrett, I don't know what the court is going to do here. If the court does uphold the ATF's rule, I'm very curious as to what logic they will use Because again, under Cargill, under Loper Bright, it would appear that the ATF doesn't have a lot of room to operate beyond what Congress has specified. And in this particular case, and I would argue too, in the case of expanding the engaged in the business rule and the pistol brace rule, quite frankly, the ATF has squarely overstepped its authority and in fact has promulgated new legislation under the guise of regulations. But we will have to see here what the court does now that oral arguments are completed. The briefing is over, and the Supreme Court likely will issue its decision in Vanderstock versus Garland here. I'm guessing probably in a couple of months. Again, it's kind of up to the court as to when we get those decisions, but it's not going to be instantaneous. It will be some time. And fingers crossed, we get a good decision that does not open the door to even more agency abuses going forward. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Colorado where a juvenile engaged in a shooting at an Independence Day celebration walked away with probation for the crime. According to the Journal newspaper, the 17-year-old was suspected of firing multiple rounds during a fight that caused chaos during the town's Independence Day fireworks show. And last week was found guilty. He's been held in the youth services in Grand Junction, Colorado since July the 5th without bail on charges of felony menacing, reckless endangerment, juvenile possession of a firearm, possession of a defaced firearm. Again, one of those guns we just talked about earlier that was serialized, but then had that serial number scratched off. Amazingly, despite the seriousness of those charges, the juvenile sentenced to just 24 months of probation. And the district attorney says that that probation actually could be terminated earlier if the probation department decides that it is appropriate. It's amazing. The judge in this case said, considering the gravity of the offense at hand and the community risk that was accomplished when you fired the shots in the air and came to the park armed, I think it constitutes a longer probationary sentence than I would normally give. It is my hope that you finish that early and successfully, but I want to give you as much time as you might need to utilize these resources. Again, felony menacing, reckless endangerment, juvenile possession of a firearm, possession of a defaced firearm. And the judge said, ordinarily, I wouldn't even give you 24 months probation, but, you know, this was a pretty serious offense. So yeah, 2 years of probation. According to the Journal newspaper, the teen was, quote, apologetic and expressed his regret to the community, saying that he knew he had made a poor decision firing the gun when the fight broke out. He was also ordered, by the way, to serve 5 days of detention with credit for time served. Now, he's been in juvenile custody since July, so that time has been served. He was released October 2nd to live with family in Grand Junction, Colorado. And again, in Colorado, the Democrats in charge of the state legislature passed, I think it was 8 new gun control laws this year, all of them aimed at lawful gun owners. Here you have a juvenile in possession of a defaced firearm who fires that gun during an Independence Day celebration, charged with multiple felonies, and what happens? Don't do that again. It's absolutely unbelievable. And I'm sure that when the legislature gets back in session in Colorado in January, we're going to see a whole other round of additional restrictions aimed at lawful gun owners. And meanwhile, violent offenders are going to keep getting a pass. Today's Armed Citizen story from San Antonio, Texas, where a homeowner shot at 2 suspected vehicle burglars, injuring one of them, according to the San Antonio police. This happened early, I believe, on Monday. Earlier today, actually, about 3 a.m. at an apartment complex on the west side of San Antonio. According to police, a man received a notification from a security monitoring system that somebody was messing around with his vehicle, so he armed himself with a rifle. His wife grabbed a handgun. They then entered their garage. They encountered 2 individuals inside their car. Police said in a preliminary report that the homeowner saw that one of the burglars was armed and fired once in their direction. The pair then took off in a vehicle. Police report doesn't say whether it was the vehicle that they were in or whether they ran out of the garage and hopped in a getaway car. After authorities arrived at the complex, they said in a report that a man was dropped off at a nearby hospital with a gunshot wound to the back. Investigators working to determine if that injured man was connected to the incident at the apartment complex. The man does apparently match the description of the alleged suspect. But according to KSAT, he is, quote, not cooperating with investigators. San Antonio Police says that no arrests have been made at this time. They have not indicated whether charges were pending. But we will keep our eyes on the story. If the account of the homeowners matches up to the evidence, and they were where they had a right to be, the burglars were not where they had a right to be, and the burglars were armed, that presented a deadly threat to the lives of the homeowners, and they would have been justified in using deadly force in response. But we will keep our eyes on any further updates out of San Antonio, Texas. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a good Samaritan in Texas who rescued a woman from a submerged SUV. This was in Archer County, Texas. It was last Thursday. A 49-year-old lost control of the vehicle and then crashed into a canal that was pretty full at the time. A man named William Hoschler, known as Billy, was working in the area when he saw the SUV. He reportedly told authorities that he saw the woman's hand sticking out of the window. And so he went into the canal to help. The woman who was trapped inside was able to break the window, and Billy Hoschler was able to help her back to shore. Sergeant Juan Gutierrez said, without Billy's courageous action, the woman could have met her demise. Billy's actions are a great representation of the amazing people within our community and the state of Texas. So again, the Department of Public Safety recognizing Billy Hoschler's life-saving actions in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save the life of a stranger. Now, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Looking forward to being back with you tomorrow. But don't forget to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information, including reaction to today's oral arguments in Vanderstock versus Garland. But we also have the latest on litigation in Massachusetts. We've got self-defense stories to talk about. It's all waiting for you right there at BearingArms.com. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Until then, enjoy your 2A Tuesday. I will be talking more about Vanderstock versus Garland on Newsmax in the 5 p.m. hour with my friend Carl Higbee. So be sure to check that out if you can. And we'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.